Another weekend, another clean sweep. Tigers, Cajuns, Saints, oh my. Cajuns with their most impressive win, winning their division, clinching a spot in the Sun Belt Conference Championship game for the second year in a row. The Tigers take care of the Hogs. Now they'll meet up with A&M. Well, more on that. But most importantly, it's Atlanta bound for the Georgia Bulldogs in the SEC Championship game. And the Saints now with a four-game lead in the NFC South thanks to their nail-biter of a win, Mr. Lutz, at the buzzer as the Saints beat the Panthers. We'll recap it all today, Monday, November 25th, 2019.
Marshall out wide to the left, Jefferson in the slot left side. Lone receiver, Racy McMath to the near side of the field, short side of the field, as the Tigers scrimmage from the near side hash. This time they'll get it on the ground. Clyde Edwards-Helaire with room, 20, near side, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Tigers!
And Will Lutz from 33 yards, Zach Wood to Thomas Morstead. Hold is down, kick is up, and it is good! It's good! Will Lutz is good from 33, and the New Orleans Saints are going to win this one 34-31. Never a doubt, Deuce.
Too much drama for me, Zach.
Garoppolo turns, play action, rolls to the left side, looking deep, he's got Kittle over the middle, wide open at the 25, chugging to the 20, Kittle on a diagonal to the 10, inside the 5, and stretches the ball across the goal line for the touchdown. Welcome back, George Kittle, 61 yards for his third touchdown of the year, and San Francisco strikes back, now up 29-8.
And on their way to a blowout win over Green Bay, San Francisco looking pretty darn good. Happy Monday to you and yours as we get this Thanksgiving week underway. It is so great to be with you. The kids are off from school, so you're hustling and bustling and getting things done. My main man, CD, back in the 237 Roof Studios, the master control suite. He's the stick that stirs the drink, the cat that makes the engine purr, whatever else cliche-wise I can say. I'm just glad that we're on the same team together. Yours truly here, Studio 1A. I'm smiling. I'm happy. My kids are happy. Tigers win. Cajuns win. Saints win. Wow. What a weekend. Yes, indeed. LSU gets underway, wins their first SEC West title since 2011 with a 56-20 win over the Arkansas Razorbacks to improve them to 11-0 overall, 7-0 in conference play. They'll close out the regular season against Texas A&M this coming Saturday, Tiger Stadium, 6 p.m. kickoff. Much more on that. Much more on that. Joe Burrow does again. It's the first time in SEC history that one team has had a 4,000-yard passer, a 1,000-plus-yard runner, and two 1,000-plus-yard receivers. What an offense this is. Coach O recapped the win over the Arkansas Razorbacks.
Good win for our team. Give Arkansas credit. Coach Looney had those guys playing. Think about this. First time in SEC history that an offense has a 4,000-yard passer, 1,000-yard rusher, and two 1,000-yard receivers. Excellent job. Excellent job by offensive staff and excellent job by players. Really, really proud of our football team tonight. I thought our defense played a lot better.
And we got some more sound coming up that's going to be really, really good. But Coach O summed it up best when he said we're not celebrating because we're not done yet.
It's not done yet. We're not done yet. And we're not going to talk about that. And obviously, it's a goal of ours, but we have bigger goals. And we'll talk about that next week. We're not finished SEC play, so we're just focusing in on Texas A&M next week.
Amen. And waiting for that one. Yes, indeed. Meanwhile, a little bit earlier in the day, the Ragin' Cajuns clinched the Sun Belt Western Division thanks to a 53-3 beatdown of Troy. That means you know who is waiting for them yet again. If App State beats Troy on Friday, the Cajuns will play the Mountaineers in Boone, North Carolina on December 7th for the Sun Belt title and a trip to the New Orleans Bowl. If there's a whole bunch of other things. If UL and Troy both win next week, the Cajuns would meet App State at Cajun Field on December the 7th. Do the Cajuns really want to play at Cajun Field? Nobody shows up. I'm sorry. This is a heck of a team. They're 9-2 for the second time in school history and the first time since 1976 while getting the 6-1 in league play as the West Division champions for the second time in the two-year format, and only 18,000 people show up to watch them. Very, very disappointing in the UL, quote, fan base. You want to be big time, you got to act big time, and you got to show up. But they don't, and gee whiz, be careful. Be careful what you ask for. But I tell you what, Billy Napier talked about a complete game win over Troy.
That's about as complete as it gets. I didn't think it would be that easy, to be honest with you. But, you know, we had a good look in our eye the last couple of days. You know, Wednesday walkthrough, Thursday's practice, and certainly yesterday we were engaged. And then pregame, they were ready to go. So
it was a beat down from the get-go, 28-3 halftime lead, 53-3 win in style. And as the head coach said, you win a title, it's an accomplishment.
We clinched the West with this win, which I think is a special accomplishment and something that we talk about. But I think that we've got to move forward. You know, we're going to celebrate this thing tonight. But next week, we got a great opportunity.
Great opportunity. No question, they close out the regular season against UL Monroe. It's a rivalry game, and looking forward to that. But Cajun fans, I'm disappointed, really, really disappointed that you don't show up. I don't know what it's going to take. I don't know what else they have to do. I thought winning brought everybody out. I can understand if they were 2-9. Who wants to go see that? But 9-2, it's one of the best teams they've had in a long, long time, and you still don't show up. Well, they show up at the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, and the Saints, in typical fashion, when it's an NFC South rival, the Carolina Panthers came in and gave the Saints everything they wanted, a 31-18 lead. They couldn't hold on to it. Thank goodness the poor field goal kicker for Carolina missed a chip shot, and thank goodness that Will Lutz didn't, because the Saints squeak out a 34-31 win to widen their gap, a four-game spread over Carolina in the NFC South. Sean Payton on the win over the Panthers.
And they made enough plays in the end of the two-minute drill. That was obviously significant. Getting the stop defensively to force a field goal was big. So, look, there's a ton that we've got to be able to clean up from this game, and the challenge is doing it on a short week, getting ready to play Thursdays.
I tell you, you can't ever underestimate a field goal kicker. Joey Sly just missed a couple of extra points. He missed the chip shot field goal. My goodness, Lutz didn't, and his head coach paid him the ultimate compliment.
Yeah, he's been real impressive in clutch situations, and you know that's what you're looking for. You know, so much is not only just the leg talent, but it's the, you know, it's the talent between your ears, and that's something that I think he's it's the strength of his.
Much more on the Saints and the officials who are hell bent and determined to not let the Saints be great. I'm telling you, across the board. Officiating, I don't know how to correct it. They're human beings. I know they're trying their best, but tripping calls, in the Patriots-Cowboys game, wow, offensive pass interference calls and then one that was overturned that wasn't a pass interference call, I've never seen anything quite like it. Oh, one more little sound by Drew Brees, CD. You can talk about the man. You can say what you want. When the game's on the line, two-minute drill, boy, he's pretty darn good. Here is number nine when that clock strikes two.
It's exciting, you know. It's butterflies. But it's also it's confidence. It's unity. You know, you feel like, man, everybody knows, you know, the challenge ahead. Everybody knows what we need to do in order to, you know, accomplish whatever it is that we need to accomplish to go win the game. And man, everybody just kind of locks in and goes. It's where a lot of the things that have happened or transpired throughout the course of the game kind of give you, you know, that information, that confidence, that, you know, assurance as to, you know, how you're going to handle that drive and, you know, how you're going to accomplish the task.
And they accomplished the task. They moved to 9-2 up next Thursday night, Thanksgiving night against the Falcons. And boy, do they owe them. And then after that one, back home in the Dome, the 49ers come to town every game. So critical. So the home teams win. A clean sweep across the board. All at home. All taking care of their business. What a great weekend it was. We'll start our list as we return. Brooks Cabina of The Advocate will join us to talk about the LSU win. Nick Fontenot of The Advertiser will join us to talk about the Cajuns win. Bob Rose in hour number two will talk about the Saints win, and then Ross Dellinger will talk all about college football for Sports Illustrated as it's rivalry week. Some big games. Tigers still number one across the board. Back with Tiger Talk next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
You're listening to the Jordy Holmberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Want to get in on the action? Call us up on the Ardco Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111.
You know, that just comes with the territory. We got big expectations for ourselves. We know the work that we put in from way back in the spring, in the summer, fourth quarter, everything. We know that we spoke at that. You know, we had our certain goal, and we won't be satisfied until we get it.
Linebacker Jacob Phillips singing the tune emanating throughout the LSU locker room. They're not celebrating winning the SEC West. That's a stepping stone, a part of the ladder and the rungs that they want to climb. Look, it's national championship or disappointment, plain and simple. We're trying to get Bruce Cabina here, but in the meantime, no problem. And look, make no mistake, that Arkansas game was forgotten immediately. A&M is on their mind. Ed Orgeron says Grant Deculus will be ready to go. Austin Deculus, rather. Grant Delpit is full speed and will practice every day this week. He says, I think the rest helped. I think we'll be as good as we can be from a physical standpoint. Sadiq Charles will be back and ready to go. So, again, just an incredible, incredible season from this ball club, particularly offensively. It's just remarkable. When you think, for instance, Clyde Edwards-Helaire now ranks second in the SEC in rushing. He's first in rushing touchdowns. He's got 1,146 yards. He's averaging 6.99 yards per carry, and he's got 15 touchdowns. Look, LSU only ran the ball 16 times against Arkansas. 16. It's the fewest in program history, ever. They also got 16.2 yards per carry, and that's an LSU record. So it's not how often you do it, but how effectively you do it. Under the radar, Thad Moss, tight end, He holds the LSU single season record now for catches by a tight end and is 16 yards shy of the yardage record. He's had 36 catches on 40 targets. That's a 90% completion rate, and that's tops among tight ends nationally. And that 90% is when he's targeted by Joe Burrow. He's excellent in run blocking. He's a complete player. So good for him. It's quite a team. And in the meantime, not only was Jacob Phillips singing that tune, but Joe Burrow as well, talking about it's just business as usual.
Business as usual. You know, it's never our goal this year to win the West. We got more goals ahead of us.
More goals ahead. And now look, this is more of a visual soundbite than it is. Just imagine a little smirk on his face and a smile when Joe Burrow talked about being excited for Saturday in Texas A&M.
Excited for Saturday. Excited.
Why does that one got
a chance to go 12-0?
And he was smiling like, yeah, you know what I'm talking about, dude. I'm media savvy now. I'm not going to give you the soundbite that you really want, but just look at my expression, and it'll tell you we want to beat these guys brains out. Brains out. Ed Orgeron, I'll tell you, this is what he said Saturday night about celebrating after beating Arkansas.
No, that's right. That was going to be not too much of a celebration to beat Arkansas. They haven't beaten anybody in a long time. So we were supposed to win that football game and on to Texas A&M.
And he apologized today. Said, I meant no harm to Arkansas. But look, he's telling the truth. He is absolutely telling the truth. He's supposed to beat Arkansas. They stink. They stink. But boy, do they need A&M. Jacob Phillips, on his memories from last season's 7 overtime loss against the Aggies.
I remember getting ejected for targeting out of that game. I remember just going in the locker room and seeing people, you know, crying, my teammates, you know, how much passion we had behind that game and, you know, losing it the way we did. It's something that we haven't forgotten and our fan base hasn't forgotten.
They have not. We have not. Jacoby Stevens first talked about his quarterback, Joe Burrow. Is there any doubt who the Heisman Trophy winner is?
Well, with Joe Heisman talk, I don't think it's a Heisman talk. He won the Heisman, in my opinion. So that's not a conversation.
It's not a conversation. Jacoby Stevens now leads the SEC safeties in sacks with 5. He had 3 against Arkansas. 10 pressures, 20 run stops in 691 snaps. Stevens singing the company tune, focused on the goal, the big goal.
You know, like I said, we're focused. It's like military. I mean, people are going to say this, we're going to say that, but at the end of the day, we have a goal. And we're reminded about that goal every week. Monday through Friday, we're reminded what their goal is. And people are going to say this and people are going to say that. But at the end of the day, we know that we're going to play. We're going to try to play to the LSU Center for Performance and to get to where we want to go.
I'm telling you what, he is something now. Making his first start, the two-sport star, Mo Hampton, had an opportunity with Grant Delpit out. So, Coach O, what'd you think of Mo Hampton's first start?
I think he did well. Yeah, I'm proud of him. Really, I thought he did very well. Obviously, there'll be some things on the film that we got to get better, but it's his first start, man, in an SEC game. I thought the guy did tremendous.
Now, that gives you the opportunity. If he plays, keeps doing it, maybe he gets some snaps, and now you can move Delpit into the box. Stevens has those hybrid defensive back, safety slash linebacker. Maybe, just maybe. Clyde Edwards-Helaire did it again. I mean, he did it again. He had 98 yards. They just wanted to give him one more play so he could get to 100. All he did was take it to the house, and you know, it was like 90 yards, 89 yards. 6 carries, a buck 88. He caught the ball out of the backfield like a champ. He was just tremendous, and his coach talked about number 22.
We really like Clyde, obviously. He's starting to learn how to hit the holes. This spread offense fits him well. He's perfect for it. It creates they always a gap short up front. They're trying to cover our receivers, and the offensive line is doing a great job, but he knows where that hole is. And usually the first guy can't tackle him. He's doing a tremendous job.
With the win Saturday, LSU clinched a berth in the Southeastern Conference Championship game for the first time since 2011. They went in 2001. They beat Tennessee 31-20. Matt Mock, the quarterback for LSU, was the MVP. In 2003, they went back again. They beat Georgia 34-13. Justin Vincent was the MVP. In 2005, Georgia got the better of LSU 34-14. DJ Shockley, the quarterback. I remember doing the Les Miles coaches show after it on television. Les wanted to run up in the stands. There were some abusive Georgia intoxicated fans getting on Les, and boy, we had to curtail him. LSU got back in 2007. They beat Tennessee again 21-14. Ryan Perilou was the MVP, and then back in 2011, the Tigers were still undefeated at that point in time. The perfect season. They beat Georgia 42-10, and the Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu, was the MVP. So they beat Tennessee twice. They're 2-1 against Georgia. They would love nothing better than to be 3-1 come December the 7th. But they got to take care of A&M first and foremost. Much more on the Aggies and the Tigers in the days to come. Much more. It's going to be something in Tiger Stadium come Saturday night. All right, we'll take a timeout. When we come back, the Raging Cajuns with a capital exclamation point to secure the Sun Belt Division title. Nick Fontenot, the advertiser, next.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
But next week, we got a great opportunity. This group of seniors is a special group of people to our staff. Certainly a group that's been through a lot, good, bad, and ugly. And they've had a lot to do with success that we've had even last year. And this year, and there is some good players, but I'm going to tell you this, there's a lot of special, unique, talented people in that group of seniors. We're excited about hosting ULM and celebrating these seniors next week.
That was Billy Napier today at his weekly press conference, where he was named an honorary Cajun by Mayor Joel Robideau. And Napier mentioned that he was humbled and also mentioned that this is the best staff he's ever been a part of, and he's been on some good ones. Nick Fontenot of the Advertiser, kind enough to join us. On two notes, thanks for filling in for me last week. I greatly appreciate that, and thanks for being here with me today on this Monday of Thanksgiving week. How you doing, Nick?
I'm doing great, Jordy. It was big shoes to fill, but I had a fun job doing it. Thanks for letting me do that.
Well, I'm glad you did, and thank you so much for doing that. 53-3? Is that the best game the Cajuns have played to date?
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, absolutely complete domination, annihilation, a rout, whatever you want to call it. I mean, they were stellar in every aspect of the game, and I don't think anybody could have seen that coming. I mean, I think I predicted maybe a 10-point win or something like that. I just thought Florida was going to have a little bit more. I thought they were going to be able to stop the Cajuns a little bit more better than they did. And I think even Napier even mentioned it in the post game press conference. It was a lot easier than he even thought. I mean, they had been preparing all week long, and he thought he could have got some things done. But it was much easier for them to move the football than I thought they were going to be able to. And yeah, they completely dominated that short team.
53-3, 9-2 overall, 6-1 in league play. They win the Western Division again for the second year in a row, and in all likelihood will take on App State again up there in Boone. What stood out in this game? Was it running game? Was it the passing? Or was it everything?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of us are talking after the game that maybe Levi Lewis is the player of the game, but I mean, he stayed in the game for three quarters. He only had one touchdown, but he was phenomenal. All three of the starting running backs, had a touchdown. Chris Smith even got in there and he was leading the way rushing. So, yeah, it was pretty much a complete performance. And I think a lot needs to be said about the defense because without Zion Hill, who's arguably their best player, you know, he was out in that game. He didn't play, and they were able to hold Troy to 3 points. I mean, that's. It's phenomenal. So yeah, it was just an all around complete game, and you know, hopefully they don't get too high on themselves because right now, you know, they get a lot of pats on the back and a lot of people are telling them, hey, you guys are great and everything's good, but they still have another game to play against ULM. They still have a championship game, so you know, hopefully they can kind of stay grounded. Sometimes that becomes a problem in its own self, but hopefully, you know, Billy Napier will have them ready to play this Saturday when they have ULM come in.
ULM, that game at Cajun Field at 6:30, ULM with a 45-42 win over Coastal Carolina, where they got 217 yards on the ground, 346 yards in the air. So that's a potent offense. I hate to bring it up, but I got to. What is it going to take to get fans to go watch this team play? What is it going to take?
Jordy, that is a great question, and if I had the answer to it, I would tell the people down at UL, and they would be implementing it. I mean, I don't know what it's going to take, but you have a 9-2 football team right now who is, you know, on the verge of the first 10-win season in school history. Saturday night, the weather was absolutely amazing, and the team is playing their best football. And yeah, I don't know. I think it's a problem all across college football where if you're not, you know, one of those Power 5 teams, if you're not in the conversation for that college football playoff or that national championship, I think attendance is down all around, and it's tough. It's a tough sell, especially you're competing with the fact that every single game is on TV. You know, I can sit in my house and be comfortable and watch that UL game, even if I'm a diehard Cajuns fan, and I don't have to go and deal with the traffic and deal with this and that. So, you know, I don't know. It's one excuse after another, and I just gave you a bunch of more excuses as to why people aren't going, but It seems like it's plaguing people all across the country.
I equate it this way. Everybody in the world knew that LSU was going to hammer Arkansas, that Arkansas had no chance, and they still got 100,000 people in the stand because it's a special season, and people want to say, you know what, I was there to see this team through thick, through thin. I was there for all of them. These seasons don't come by all the time, and you never know what's going to happen from year to year. It's a special season. I just don't understand why the 18,000 people in that state, that's a crime. That's a shame. I feel for the players who work hard, the coaching staff who puts in relentless hours, and they nobody shows up to watch them. I don't get it.
And not only that, Jordy, it was a lot less than 18,000. You know, that's the amount of attendance, but you know, the people that were actually in the house were a lot less. And, yeah, you're right. You feel for the senior class. You know, I mean, this is their last year playing in Cajun Field. And you know, you talk about a coach like Billy Napier. He's a hot name right now. He's proven that you can win at UL. And he's not going to be here forever. So these opportunities to watch him coach this team and especially this senior class, you know, they're missing out. I mean, they're winning 10 games this year. There's no guarantee they'll get that done next year. And, yeah, it's a shame, and I don't know how to get people there, but, man, it's like at this point it almost seems impossible to get people in there, and it's a shame.
And now you've got the LSU game at 6 o'clock. They play at 6:30. It could be worse unless Monroe brings a whole bunch of fans down, which they'll bring their fair share. There's no question about that. But anyway, it's just a shame. Let's talk about some positive things. We talked about Levi Lewis. You said he played three quarters, 21 of 33 for 273 yards and no interceptions. It seems to me that's one player from the start of the season to now who has made a quantum leap in his approach and in his production.
Definitely, and you know, we you and I talk every week about the Cajuns, and we pretty much talk about Levi Lewis, and I think my one consistent comment on him has been that he's slowly gotten better. It hasn't been as fast as anybody wanted, but he's just slowly getting better and better and better. And honestly, I think he's there. I think he has finally become the quarterback that everybody wanted. It didn't come as fast as we all wanted. It didn't come as fast as we thought it might. But, you know, it's progressively getting better. And when you look at the guy who played Mississippi State in that opening week to the guy that played last week in Troy, it's a completely different quarterback. And that's a testament to not only him, but the coaches who are putting him in position and getting him ready. And, you know, he's done a really good job. And I'm really impressed with his consistent improvement. And now you're at the point where he's playing his best football at the time where you want to be playing your best football. And I think that's all they could ask for. And he's got the team in position to where they are able to do some of the things that they want to do at the beginning of the season, which is win the Sun Belt Conference, win a bowl game, and do the things they weren't able to do last year. So all testament to Levi Lewis and the coaching staff for getting him in the position that he's in right now.
We're talking with Nick Fontenot of The Advertiser, who joins us each and every Monday to talk about the Raging Cajuns. It's a great rivalry, isn't it? UL Monroe comes to town. They've got Johnson, a running back who ran for 129 yards on only 19 carries against Coastal Carolina. They've got a quarterback in Evans who was 19 of 33 for 346 yards. So it seems to me this will be another test for Ron Roberts and the Raging Cajun defense.
And historically, this game has some crazy things happening. I mean, it's one of those games where, you know, the thing that you thought was going to happen doesn't normally happen, or the team you thought was going to win, you know, sometimes comes out on the other side of it. So if the Cajuns go in, you know, filling themselves a little bit and not as prepared as they need to be for ULM, it wouldn't be a shocker if the Warhawks came out and upset the Cajuns. So, you know, the way they're playing right now and the way Billy Napier has them prepared, I don't really see that happening. But like I said, man, in this annual rivalry with UL and ULM, it's one of those games where anything can happen. And if anything happens, from, you know, crazy safeties to two-point conversions to punt blocks and things like that, I mean, we've seen it all in this game. So, you know, if anything crazy happens, it won't be a shocker. So the Cajuns are going to need to be prepared. And ULM is not bad. I mean, they took Florida State right to the end this year. And they're a good football team, so they can come in and win the game, and they're going to be playing for something too. So the Cajuns are going to need to be prepared and fully focused on this ULM team.
And they got no shot against the Raging Cajuns on Saturday. I'm just here to tell you that 10-win season's coming, and I'm telling you right here, right now, the Cajuns are going to be playing in New Orleans because they're going up to Boone, and they're going to get off the schneid and finally beat those guys. I just think that, as you mentioned, slowly but surely getting better and better, and he's there now. I think Levi Lewis is the difference. I think the way he's playing now is the difference. The defense has stepped up. There's no question. You know you can run the football. The one question mark has been the play of the quarterback, and he has arrived. He has put back-to-back-to-back great games together. He's confident. The left-hander can play. I think that's the difference. I really do.
And he also has a full bevy of weapons. He has Demarcus Bradley and Bam Jackson are both there, you know, catching the football. And Jalen Williams has really come on as another option. And the tight end position has played well with Nick Walston and Pierce Meagle and those guys and Peter LeBlanc. All of his weapons are there right now, and the offense is playing at a high level. So, you know, I think you're right. I mean, if I had to pick the game, I'd definitely pick the Cajuns to beat ULM. And then hopefully they get a chance to go up to Boone and win that game, because that's going to be a tough one. And I hope they don't overlook this ULM team because of that championship game that's looming. And I think they're going to be able to kind of go back on what happened when they dominated Coastal Carolina. I think they kind of overlooked South Alabama and were still able to come out with a win, but they kind of were looking ahead to this Troy game and then these games coming up. So they'll be able to go back on that and say, hey, look, we had that game against Coastal. We laid an egg against South. Now we had this perfect game against Troy. Let's not go out and lay an egg against ULM.
I'm with you. I'm totally with you. Nick Fontenot of The Advertiser, thanks so much, my friend, for everything. I hope you and yours have a fabulous, fabulous Thanksgiving. And let's see if we can get another clean sweep with the Cajuns, the Tigers, and the Saints again this coming week. That's back-to-back clean sweeps. First all on the road, then all at home. So let's see if we can get it done again this time. Thank you so much, my friend. Great job.
All right, Jordy, thank you very much.
That's Nick Fontenot of the advertiser. Now, you know, we like to give things away, and we like to make sure that you're well taken care of, and we've got another one for you, Mabel's Kitchen. I've never been to Mabel's Kitchen, but it just sounds cozy and comfy and just some good down-to-earth home-cooked meals, doesn't it? It just does. You can get a $25 gift certificate. Enter to win that $25 certificate to Mabel's Kitchen that's located inside Cypress Bayou. Enter to win in the 1037 The Game Clubhouse at 1037thegame.com. And don't forget about ShopRite Tobacco Plus discount outlets. Are you a Buku Reward member yet? If you are, then you know the savings and the specials that you are entitled to each and every day. If you're not, boy, you've really missed out. But it's never too late. Buku means, come on, for everyone. Joyous, celebration, savings. Become a Buku Rewards member at ShopRite Tobacco Plus discount outlets. There are 60 of them in southern and central Louisiana. Man, if you can't shop right at ShopRite, I'm serious. You just can't shop right at all. We'll hear from the Saints after their 34-31 win over the Panthers next here on the Jordy Helpert Show.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you're locked into the Jordy Helpert Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Peterbilt of Louisiana, locations in Lafayette, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, and Lake Charles, the best of the best. It's the dream of every driver to own a Peterbilt truck because it's the most reliable, dependable, safest, most comfortable, best looking. It's got it all and the best resale value to boot. It's the standard bearer of the industry. With those locations, new and used, we lease them. Jack Brabham and his staff do a tremendous job across the board. Service department, parts department, they've got it all. Peterbilt of Louisiana, the best of the best. Speaking of the best, finalists for college football awards. Of course, Joe Burrow's a finalist for the Davey O'Brien and the Maxwell Awards. He's going to win both of those, in my opinion. Grant Delpit is a finalist for the Jim Thorpe Award. He's got no shot. No shot. Not having the year, and he's been hurt, just not having the year. Now, he'll get drafted very highly because of the potential and what he has shown on tape before, but just not having that year before. And Jamar Chase is a finalist for the Biletnikoff Award. Devontae Smith and Jerry Jeudy of Alabama did not make the cut, nor did Justin Jefferson. But the three finalists for the Biletnikoff Award, remember Josh Reed won that for LSU back in the day. Michael Pittman Jr. of USC, The biggest competition is going to be C.D. Lamb from Oklahoma. But I think Jamar Chase is going to win that one too. I really, really do. So, just a couple of things there for you. The Saints, they have Atlanta coming up Thanksgiving night. Eat all your turkey you want and do all that stuff and then settle in. Some bad calls, some terrible officiating. You weren't going to get much from Sean Payton, but here's what he said about the overturned. In other words, there was no pass interference called. Ron Rivera challenged and said, hey, there was interference on the play. And for the first time in, like, forever, the officials actually overturned the pass interference call. And here's Sean Payton talking about that after the game.
Nothing. I mean, you can't control it. I mean, you just got to evaluate your own gut. You know, even the muff punt was tough with the angles. You know, we finally got one angle where you could see it kind of hit the footer, the back of the calf. But I was concerned that, you know, that there wasn't a clear visual angle until I saw that one. You got to trust your gut. That was our second challenge. So we were out of challenges, but that was significant because, obviously, it's a turnover. We score a touchdown. You know, if you say a challenge is worth a touchdown, which I think it would be, But the earlier one, I just disagree with. I mean, I thought it was a real good route by Jared.
Like Jared Cook, he got called for offensive pass interference. Michael Thomas got called for offensive pass interference, and then they overturned a no call into one. Anyway, but through it all, thank goodness, Will Lutz at the buzzer kicks the field goal to win it, and he talked about the game winner.
Well, like I said last time, you know, with our offense, our quarterback, our play calling, I figured we'd get a chance. Told Drew thanks for making it a little shorter this time. But, look, we continue to find a way to win even when we're not playing at our best. So it's a big team win. And, yeah, we'll roll on to a short week and get to Atlanta.
How'd you hit it?
I actually didn't think I hit too well. My heart kind of sank after I hit it, to be honest. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's a stat on the score sheet. So I feel good. Nice win.
Yeah, he just got it inside that right post to get the points. I'm always curious about what kickers say about other kickers. And just prior to that, Joey Sly missed a chip shot that would have given the Panthers a three-point lead. And then Lutz would have had to kick the field goal to send it to overtime. Instead, he won it. He talked about his counterpart for the Panthers.
You know, you hate it, man. You know, obviously it's a part of the game. And, you know, at the end of the day, when it comes to specialists, we're such a tight-knit community that you don't want to win because the specialist screws up. So it's hard to swallow as a specialist to see him go through that. But I think he's a tremendous kicker. I told him that before the game. I think he's got a bright future, and he'll bounce back. He'll be good.
Boy, that's the biggest field goal kicker I've ever seen. He's in that weight room constantly. He is big, man. Anyway, so now it's a quick turnaround. The good news is the Falcons know you, and you know the Falcons. And the Falcons put it on you. Maybe you overlooked them. I don't know, but that defensive pressure really got after Drew Brees. So Brees talked about preparing his offense for Thursday night in Georgia.
As I recall, it wasn't too long ago, obviously. You know, they got after us a little bit with the pass rush. We were not very balanced offensively. You know, we didn't run the ball that many times. We didn't run it as effectively as I know we can. And so I think anytime we take the field, regardless of who the opponent is, man, we want to be balanced. We want to be efficient. We want to stay on the field, convert third downs, make big plays when we have the opportunity, score points, win games.
That is the key. That defensive pressure was way, way too much. Atlanta came in there with the right attitude, and I think now the Saints will be focused and ready to go. And so that kickoff is at noon. I mean, excuse me, it is Thursday night. Pardon me. I'm thinking about the Saints game. Everybody's asking if the game is going to be flexed, and it's not. Against San Francisco. The chance to maybe move that to the late afternoon game or the primetime game on Sunday night, that's not going to happen. They're going to keep it at that 12 noon kickoff inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome with so much at stake in that ball game. So for whatever reason, maybe bigger markets are involved. Seattle and the Rams are the primetime game, and then Kansas City, New England is the late afternoon game. So, anyway, there you have it. Hour number one in the books, brought to you by DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in Bro Bridge. Frankie's a great guy. He's got everything you need for your travel parties, whatever they may be, and that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner with the best cheeseburger in town. High school football games this Friday. Still got some teams vying for state championships. Oh, yeah. DC's Little Capital Exxon has you covered. We'll be back. Hour number two, the Jordy Helfrich Show, 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game. Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Holtberg.
Hour two of two on this Thanksgiving week. Happy Monday, November 25th to you and yours, however you may be listening to us, wherever you may be. Thank you. A lot of high school football teams still hanging around. Congratulations. Go out to Acadiana. They're in the quarterfinals of the non-select football playoffs, as is Clint Domain's Karen Crow Bears. Yeah, they take on Warren Eastern. Bro Bridge still in the hunt. And in the select brackets, St. Thomas More, after their big 42-21 win over Evangel, they'll host St. Louis. And my De La Salle Cavaliers, see, they are still in the hunt. U High will be in New Orleans to take on the Cavaliers. And then in Division III, number one seed, Lafayette Christian, comes down to Baton Rouge to take on Dunham. Dunham with the upset of Newman and Arch Manning and company. And then St. Charles Catholic will be at Catholic of New Iberia. New Iberia beat Notre Dame 24-21. So that's some of the teams still in the hunt for a state championship, and we wish them all the very, very best. As we do each and every day at this time, let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. Mr. Domain, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, CD, your Bears are still in the hunt. My Cavaliers are still in the hunt. Your Cajuns win a title. My Tigers win a title. And so it's a pretty good weekend for all of us.
It's a pretty great weekend for all of us, Jordy. And add the fact that, you know, the Saints, after Thursday, could very well be winning the NFC South if they get the job done against the Atlanta Falcons. How crazy is that to have the division secured before the calendar flips to December?
That would be fantastic. I would love it. And no better place to do it than in Atlanta and beat those guys and make up for what they did to you a couple weeks ago. Yes.
It would be absolutely fantastic. And I mentioned it to you a while back when I saw kind of the NBA schedule come out and everything was kind of just set of the way it is. Jordy, we are officially in like the saltiest week of the year in my mind. Because Wednesday, we're going to have AD and the Lakers make their way over to the Smoothie King Center on Wednesday. Thursday, the Saints are heading over to Atlanta. And then Saturday, in-state rivalry, Cajuns, UL Monroe, and then the LSU A&M rivalry pins a new chapter. And it's going to be such a great week of like just general rivalries.
Absolutely. Thanksgiving's here and all good eating and good times. Cannot wait. Cannot wait. And we'll have Thursday off and you know, we'll kind of have Friday off as well. So that's a pretty good deal.
It's absolutely fantastic. Well, I mean, you'll have Friday off. I know Ben will have Friday off, kind of, sort of. I know he'll be doing the Carrigal High School football game on our sister station, Z105.9, and I'll be here kind of manning the ship for the most part when it comes to the high school football games. We're down to two teams on our family at Delta Media Stations with Karen Crow and St. Thomas More right here on the mothership, baby.
I'm with you, baby. I hear you. Look, I want them to win. I want them all to win. That's great. Fun times. A lot of pressure, a lot on the line, but they're playing great, man. Good for all of them.
It's absolutely fantastic. And, you know, we'll kind of keep the conversation going about LSU-Arkansas for just a little bit, Jordy. You mentioned it earlier. Right. The fact that Ed Ogeron apologized for what he said, talking about Arkansas, he shouldn't have. It's like, you know, here's the thing.
Shouldn't have.
You're just stating facts. It's like, it's not like, oh, hey, you know,
exactly
what happened in the locker room a couple weeks ago against Alabama. This was a different story. Like, Arkansas is absolutely trash this year, and they've been trash for a while. It's you had a really bad hire after a relatively bad hire in Brett Bielema. This is going to kind of happen.
Yeah. He spoke the truth, and sometimes people get offended when people speak the truth. Shame on them. He had no need to apologize. Arkansas knew it. Everybody in the world knew it. So he doesn't need to. But moving on, look, I'm telling you, it's going to be one of those environments. It's going to be a special night in Tiger Stadium, I can promise you. Burrow's, they're going to say goodbye to Joe Burrow. Place is going to be packed. Everybody wants to get after A&M after what Damian Craig did and what Jimbo Fisher's nephew did.
Yeah.
The fracas afterwards, the fact that LSU got hosed in the game a couple of times. But that's, you know, That's all, like O said, that's last year, different players. But in the back of his mind, he's going, if I can put 80 on the board in regulation, I'm going to put 80. And when we put Miles Brennan in the game, I'm going to let him throw it and throw it, and we're going to try and run it up. A&M's going to have something to say. They're not a bad club at all, but LSU wants this one and wants this one badly.
They're not a bad club at all. I mean, Texas A&M pushed Georgia to the absolute limit over the weekend. Definitely a big surprise, and, man, that could have wound up causing a little bit of chaos in the college football playoff rankings, which honestly is all I want, Jordy. That's all I want for Christmas is chaos when it comes to the college football playoff.
Well, there's that potential. There is that potential. And we'll see. You know, Oregon did us a favor, did Alabama a favor. Now, Oklahoma, Utah, you know, Baylor, we'll see. But look, all I want to do is control our own destiny, let LSU take care of their own business, and we'll be fine.
It's absolutely amazing, Jordy, to see what's been going on with LSU, the Saints, and the Cajuns. But you brought it up earlier. What in the world is it going to take to get attendance to be 20,000 this Saturday when the Cajuns play the Warhawks? Because that just seems like a stretch in and of itself, and even more so with the fact it's going to be on the U this Saturday, primetime college football. The Cajuns are a part of it. What a time to be alive.
This team deserves it. The administration's done everything they can. The cost of soft drinks and hot dogs is minimum. The team is really good. They've got star players. I don't know what else it could possibly take. I don't know. I can't figure it. We have done our part,
yep.
And we don't even get access hardly. Because they want to go to some other state. We don't even get them.
Yeah.
They don't even return text messages to us.
Get them.
They're sports information people. Don't even return a text. We just want to help. And they don't even have the common courtesy to say, "Nah, you know, we've got this contract with this other radio station, so we really..." They don't even do anything. So they get what they deserve. The fans don't show up. I don't care. LSU's got 100,000 people showing up for a team that they're favored by 44 over, because it's a special year, and they want to be a part of it, and they want to see it, because they don't come often. They just don't. Raging Cajun fans, I don't know what else to say. And as far as the sports information and all that, they don't accommodate. We ain't going to accommodate them. Sorry. See you later. Next.
Jordy, we got to move on. Is Nick Saban, my goodness, he had some things to say today, Jordy, in his Monday press conference, probably a press luncheon.
Well, I missed it.
So,
what did he say?
Auburn is probably the best team Alabama has played so far, 2 weeks after losing to LSU. Is it the most ridiculous thing you've ever heard Saban say?
That is absurd. I mean, he should have said this is a team he shouldn't even said it. I mean, come on, LSU beat Auburn. LSU beat Alabama. Now he's saying Auburn's the best team. He had a brain freeze on that one. He's getting up there in age. He just forgot where he was. He never says anything disparaging against the opponent. Doesn't want to give any bulletin board material. But man, save that one, right? Save it. Use it again next year. My goodness.
Or maybe use it again. Maybe use it again after if they make the playoff.
Yeah. Oh my God. They ain't making the playoff. I can tell you that right now. That ain't going to happen. Somehow, some way, it's just not going to happen. All right. That's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. We'll be back. Saints Talk, Bob Rose next.
.1037 The Game on your Amazon Echo.
And we welcome you back. The New Orleans Saints with A dramatic win yesterday over the Carolina Panthers, now 9-2 overall, a stranglehold on the NFC South Division as they lead by 4 games now over the Carolina Panthers. Next up, a Thanksgiving night affair at in Atlanta against the Falcons. Ooh, payback on that one. But as per the norm, Bob Rose of Canal Street Chronicles, kind enough to join us. Man, Bob, Saints did everything to try and give that game away, including some not-so-friendly help from the officials. But I guess whenever you're playing these division rivals, you just throw records out the window and expect the unexpected. What a crazy win.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me on. Jordy, happy early Thanksgiving to you and all
Same
your
to
listeners.
You. Thank you.
Thank you. Wow, yeah, that Saints-Panthers are usually among the most exciting games in the NFL year in and year out, especially the ones played in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, I've noticed over the years. And, yeah, this game did not lack for entertainment, fireworks, drama, the unexpected, et cetera, et cetera. Let's try to ignore, as you and I usually try to do, let's try to ignore the black and white striped influence on it. And give all the credit in the world, first of all, to the Carolina Panthers. I mean, my goodness, they had some fight left in them, didn't they?
Boy, did they. But, no, we got to talk about the officials a little bit here. I mean, are they just trying? I mean, it's to the point now where, and rightly so, Saints fans are thinking, well, it's going to happen again. They're going to do it to us again. They don't want us to be successful. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And it's you and I have talked about this, I feel like, countless times before now. The officiating and the league office and the influence that they let the officials have on these games, not just the New Orleans Saints, but you look throughout the league, it's taken so much of the luster and enjoyment out of viewing a football game, either in person or on TV, for more so than the average fan, but even the most avid football observer. It's downright sickening every single week.
I'm with you. Can't control that, but we can control certain things. And left tackle Teron Armstead left the game, high ankle sprain. They're already without their left guard Andres Pete. So, my goodness gracious! And a high ankle sprain—that could be a long time for, especially for a player of that size and that bulk. Man, that's concerning to me.
Yeah, it really is, especially when you look at the next couple games on the Saints' schedule. First up, obviously, is the Atlanta Falcons, who have a lot of speed on that front. They got to Drew Brees more than a few times, 6 times in total just a few weeks ago, and that was with Armstead in the lineup. It's going to be a big, big test for that offensive line, especially on the left side. Like you said, they're not only without Armstead, but also without Andres Pete. And both players played, I'm going to say, adequately in place of their starting counterparts yesterday. But you could tell that the Panthers focused their pass rush, which is extremely talented, on the left side of that New Orleans line. Give credit to Sean Payton and Drew Brees and Pete Carmichael. They did adjust their play calling. They got the ball out of Brees' hands even faster than what he normally does. And they're going to have to do that again on Thursday night and probably for the following week against a very formidable San Francisco 49ers pass rush as well.
Yeah. Boy, the 49ers look good, especially in their win last night. We're talking with Bob Rose of Canal Street Chronicles. Which was the more egregious pass interference call, the one on Jared Cook or the one on Michael Thomas at the goal line?
Personally, I think it was the one on Jared Cook. I would still like to know what they're seeing, and I'm using air quotes here. But the one against Michael Thomas, was pretty bad too. Obvious, and I've said this before on your show and on mine as well. I find it absolutely infuriating. I don't consider myself a highly intelligent man, but I find it absolutely infuriating and an insult to my intelligence that these officials continue to get away with such blatant, obvious things week in and week out. Not necessarily against the New Orleans Saints per se, but certainly in my opinion, and it's always been my opinion, that they will protect certain teams and certain players. And I don't know, it makes you wonder what their end game goal really is.
Well, we can complain all we want. The Dallas Cowboys sure have a right to complain two tripping calls. Are you kidding me? Maybe now that affects the most powerful owner in the league. Maybe some change will come, but I don't know what the answer is.
No, neither do I. And the Patriots are one of those teams / players that I'm referring to when I say protecting certain brands, et cetera, et cetera. Let the players play. I understand that you have certain rules in place to try to allegedly protect player safety, and supposedly it's to also improve the quality of the game as a view, from a viewer's aspect, but it really doesn't. When you're watching a game, even as a regular fan or an average fan, how are you supposed to, in good conscience, celebrate when on every play, good play that you think your team makes, you can't jump up and down. You can't cheer because you immediately watch for the bottom of the screen for that little yellow flag to come into place. Let the players play. These are the best athletes in the world, the most conditioned, the most well-prepared. They know the rules, and they're good rules, black and white on paper. You need full-time officials. You need non-corrupt officials. And, yes, I'll say it, non-corrupt officials to officiate your game.
What do you think the Saints have learned after that game against the Atlanta Falcons? The Falcons came back down to earth. Tampa Bay beat them and beat them pretty good after two straight wins. Now the Saints get to turn around and play on Thanksgiving night. A very important game with San Francisco looming. You got to get these wins because home field advantage is so important. What's the biggest lesson they learned from that Atlanta loss?
Biggest lesson I would think for these young players especially is not to take any team or any situation lightly. The Atlanta Falcons certainly came to play a few weeks ago in the Dome, and they're going to again. The Saints cannot and will not, I don't think, take this team lightly. They have to take care of business, and it starts up front on both lines. They have to establish dominance at the line of scrimmage like they have all season long when they have been successful, and take advantage early on of any opportunities they have. And we've actually seen the Saints offense in particular do that the last couple weeks against Tampa Bay and again yesterday against Carolina.
And I think they've got to do a much better job of stopping the run and make Matt Ryan have to throw it and throw it and throw it and throw it. That's we will see. Now, that sets up the big question. The Saints' biggest game, if they take care of their business, their biggest game of the season in 2 weeks is a noon game against the San Francisco 49ers. We've seen some games already flexed. Do you think the networks flex that game and make it the late afternoon game or even maybe the prime time window game?
Actually, as it stands right now, a little less than an hour ago, the Saints and I believe the league too announced that the 49ers Saints game will not be flexed and will remain at its noon kickoff time, noon central kickoff time. And they're going to leave, I believe it's Eagles versus Giants for the evening kickoff. So that's going to be a high noon showdown between our old friends, the San Francisco 49ers and the New Orleans Saints.
And they got the Patriots and the Chiefs that are set for the 3:25 kickoff on CBS. So, okay, no flexing on that one. The Seahawks and the Rams are prime time on NBC. All right, two major markets there. Okay, we'll see. Give me your final say on a very hard fought. They missed the field goal. We made the field goal win over Carolina.
Real quick, my game balls are simply go to Will Lutz, who is as good a clutch kicker as there is in the National Football League. Michael Thomas, because he's Michael Thomas. Drew Brees, because the 40-year-old man can still take the team on his shoulders and win the game when he's asked to do it. And Jerry Cook, who I thought did an outstanding job. Saints fans, and I include myself in this, I know we were crying all offseason. Why didn't the Saints add another receiver? Why didn't the Saints add another pass-catching threat? Jared Cook is that threat, ladies and gentlemen. You know, of Freeze's 18 second half completions, 17 of them were to a man named Thomas, Kamara, or Cook. So he's worked up a good relationship with Cook, and I'm anxious to see how well that pays dividends down the stretch.
And Breeze, Bob, made it known, you know, Cook was hurt during the training camp, and then Breeze gets hurt, so he'd really only played two games. This is their third game together, and that catch he made where he went upstairs about 10 feet in the air to go get it was spectacular. So he's become, it looks like they're, like you said, they're starting to develop that, that I know where you're going to be, you know where I'm going to be, and I can throw it to you and trust you. So we will see. A short week, we'll be watching Thursday night. Saints-Falcons, we owe them big time. So I'm looking forward to starting off this week the right way with the Saints win. So Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles, happy Thanksgiving to you, your family, and thanks so much for contributing to our show each and every week.
Oh, same to you, my friend, and I hope you and your family have a great Thanksgiving as well. It is truly my pleasure and my honor.
All right, we'll take a quick time out here. Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated, College Football, Rivalry Week, next. Welcome back. Another weekend of college football in the books. LSU still remains number one. Ohio State got some votes away from the Tigers as that gap narrows just a little bit. And it is rivalry week. I hate saying that word. It's the hardest word in show business to say. Rivalry week is upon us in college football. Ross Dellinger, our good friend, lead college football writer for Sports Illustrated. He's out in the world on assignment, but he's got kind enough to spend a few minutes with us here today, as per the norm. Deli, how are you, my friend?
Good, Jordy. How you doing?
I'm good. What was the biggest takeaway from this weekend? Was it the fact that FIU shocked the U, or that Greg Schiano and Rutgers couldn't strike a deal? What was your biggest takeaway over the weekend?
Well, you know, for me, when you talk about the playoff and the national championship, it was that Oregon basically eliminated itself from the playoff with a loss at Arizona State. You know, that shook up things, opened the door, maybe cracked the door a little bit for Alabama, for Oklahoma or Baylor, whoever wins the Big 12 with one loss. So that was the biggest thing. Obviously, I talked to Butch Davis and his son, who's on the staff there at FIU, yesterday about that big win a little bit. And you can find a story on SI.com about that. That was kind of a cool thing for them to a former Hurricanes coach who, you know, was passed up a few times to come back and coach the Hurricanes to go in and win that game. So big stuff for sure.
What does that say about the Miami and, oh, my God, that's just awful. How about 42 charged after protesting what ended up being a heck of a game between Harvard and Yale?
that was interesting. That was probably the screenshot of the day there. I saw a lot of circulate around on social media with the signs and such in midfield. I actually had some friends at that game. They were texting me from the stands about how crazy it was, like delayed like an hour or something like that. So things you normally, don't see necessarily in SEC football.
Yes, Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. So it's rivalry week. Alabama needs a win, but they need a win in a big way, don't they, over Auburn?
Well, yeah, they need a, you know, you hate to talk about the style points and all that stuff shouldn't matter, but it does matter, you know. It does because of the committee and the system and how it is. And so they need a big win over Auburn, and I think even that might not save them. You know, the Utah runs the table and beats Oregon in the Pac-12 championship game, and then in Oklahoma or Baylor, you know, being 12-1 and winning the Big 12 championship, I would think would be a ahead of the Tide, even if they do get a big win over Auburn. But you never know. You know, those resumes will be stacked up there. It'll be we've never seen a Power Five conference champion with one loss, you know, passed over by a non-Power Five champion with a loss. So if it happens, it'll be a first. But it is Alabama, and we talk a lot about you know, the subjectivity of the committee and the name and all that stuff. So I think Alabama's best shot, though, is to have Oklahoma, Baylor, and Utah all at some point take their second loss.
Interesting. Boy, what do you think is going through Jim Harbaugh's mind right now? I mean, Ohio State's coming to town. That Penn State gave him a challenge, but they stood upright. Michigan's at 9-2. They're hosting him in the Big House. This is the one team he hasn't been able to beat. Now that and Urban Meyer's gone, but Coach Day has done a tremendous job with tremendous talent. Man, what would a win for Jim Harbaugh do for his status in Ann Arbor?
Yeah, it'd be incredibly significant. And, you know, before the season, you know, Michigan was one of my teams I picked to make the playoff, and I thought this was the year they were going to host Ohio State, a first-year coach, a new quarterback for Ohio State. And Michigan had the, you know, the veteran coach, been there 5 or 6 years, veteran quarterback. I thought this was going to be the year. And early in the season, we obviously, you know, it was a pretty strong message that this wasn't the year. However, mm-hmm. they're on a roll, and they've yeah. They've been winning, and now all of a sudden you get the feeling that they might be able to at least make it an interesting game there in the Big House. And certainly LSU fan, we talked about the, you know, you opened the segment here with the, you know, LSU losing, I think it's 4 AP right. first place votes and Ohio State gaining those 4 for first place. Still a big gap, at least in the AP poll, 50 first place votes for LSU and 9 for Ohio State. But, you know, as Ohio State keeps going, they've got more quality competition ahead than LSU does. And they could be a potential flip there by the committee, and Michigan could go a long way in helping that if they can, if they either get blown out or keep it close. So, you know, LSU fans will be rooting for a close one there in Ann Arbor. And I think at least for a while, it might be pretty tight.
We're pulling for the khakis. There's no question about that. The other one in the Big Ten that's not getting a lot of pub, but it's significant for Minnesota as they host. It's number 10 Minnesota hosting 12th-ranked Wisconsin. Minnesota with that one loss. Wisconsin with 2. Boy, big one for Minnesota and the Fighting Flex.
Yeah, it is. You know, rivalry week brings with it some pretty significant games here for playoff contenders. And I think we got at least one big game that involves a playoff contender in each of the time windows. You know, we have the early game, of course, is Michigan, Ohio State, and then you've got Oklahoma. I think that plays at night against Oklahoma State, and in the middle of the day, you got the Iron Bowl, and I believe Wisconsin and Minnesota's in the middle of the day. I can't remember exactly when that one.
2:30.
So we have a lot of these playoff contenders in each time frame. Of all the ones we've talked about, that's when all the ones that are going to be played, that's one that has been a little overshadowed, but certainly a big game. And I think it's probably been overshadowed because the winner of that game obviously has to play Ohio State to have any shot, you know, has to beat them, have any shot at making the playoffs. And it just doesn't feel like either one of those teams can beat Ohio State. However, Penn State showed last week in the horseshoe that Ohio State is not invincible, and they can be scored on. They can make mistakes, especially late in the game. We saw a few fumbles from the Buckeyes. So they showed a little bit of some cracks, and you got to wonder again, you know, Michigan's probably going to be their toughest test of these next two, but then they get they have to win another game over a top 25 team, whether that be Wisconsin or Minnesota.
He is Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated. LSU took care of business as expected, and no celebrating from Ed Orgeron. He said it's on. It's A&M week, and away we go. LSU would love to put 80 points up on A&M in regulation if they could, don't you think?
I think that they would like that. Yeah, I of course they'd also want their quarterback to be healthy for next week. So it's one of those things that Ed Orgeron is going to have to to think about. Obviously, don't want to leave his Heisman Trophy quarterback out there too long in a game that you know that they've got locked up. But at the same time, I'm sure he wants a little retribution. And in his comments after the, I know he apologized for them. I think some of them today.
Right.
But look, I mean the real feelings come out, you know, when a person is emotional. The real kind of feelings come out, and it was refreshing to hear Ed Orgeron actually say the real feelings after that game. So we know how everybody feels there. You know, they are ticked off at A&M for a number of things, you know, and there's so many connections between the two schools.
Right.
It's really gotten to the point where this thing is building into a really significant and kind of nasty rivalry.
Ross, I remember when Saban made his first trip back to Baton Rouge as the head coach at Alabama and the vitriol that was there. I'm telling you, Jimbo Fish is going to be close second for a variety of reasons. It's going to be a close second. It could, and Damian Craig better have a bye. I'm not suggesting anything, but after what happened a year ago, well, he better be careful.
Yeah. Yeah, Damian, again, one of those, you know, former LSU receivers coach who Ed Orgeron fired after signing day of his first signing day.
Yeah.
And Damian charged across the field at Ed after the final play of that 7 overtime game, ran over to the LSU coaches, bumped shoulders, and really kind of honestly just instigated that whole mess.
He
didn't do that. You know, that Cole Fisher was the one involved, obviously, you know, Jimbo's nephew and kind of an analyst on the team. He was the one holding back Damian, and he was over there trying to get him out of there. And if he's not over there, we don't have, you know, the whole brawl and all that stuff. So, yeah, it all does kind of go point back to Damian.
Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. So we've talked about this for several weeks now. We believe, if I stand correct, that if LSU goes through the regular season, beats A&M, no matter what happens in the SEC championship game against Georgia, other than getting blown out by 50, LSU's in. We believe that Ohio State is going to be in, and we believe that Clemson is going to be in. So Alabama fans are hoping for a big win over Auburn, and then they're hoping for LSU to blow Georgia out of the water in the SEC championship game. Is that their ticket in?
Yeah, I think they've got to have other things happen. You know, like I said earlier, we've never seen a Power 5 champion jumped by a non-Power 5 champion with both of those teams having the same amount of losses. We've seen Alabama get in 2017 with a loss and not winning the championship, but they got in over – there was no Power 5 one-loss teams left out. There were two Power 5 two-loss teams left out. So – they need Utah, they need Baylor, they need Oklahoma probably to all take a second loss. Their best bet is that. However, if Baylor, because of its non-conference schedule, finishes 12-1 and wins the Big 12, it'd be interesting. That would make it interesting. And Alabama blows out Auburn. That would be the really interesting one. But I think Utah and Oklahoma jump Alabama if they're 12-1, either one of those teams.
I agree with you 100%. Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. Joe Burrow widened the gap for the Heisman, or is there someone you think that still has a chance to usurp him?
No, I think, you know, it would be a real shock right now if Joe Burrow were to get leaped. But, you know, we probably could have said that maybe about Tua last year around this time, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you remember So you never know. I think even more than Tua, though, Joe has a little more secured this season. It feels that way, at least. So barring a crazy charge by, you know, it would probably be Justin Fields, you know, just carving through Michigan and then carving through a Big Ten championship. And then if Joe were to struggle or throw a bunch of picks, say, in the championship game, maybe we see the pendulum kind of swing, but it would take, like Tua had in the SEC championship game against Georgia, it would take a really bad game for Burrow against Georgia and really, really good stuff from Justin Fields.
Or does Chase Young being on the same team, a lot of people think he's the most impactful player out there, and look what he did after 2 weeks' rest. He was unbelievable. Does he take some of the vote away from a Justin Field?
He's certainly the most impactful defensive player. There's no doubt about that. Yeah. He's incredible to watch. The problem is he's a defensive player, and we just don't see it happen a lot. Does he take away votes from Justin Field? Maybe, maybe some people that might be the case. And so maybe they're, Ohio State's going to split kind of that vote there. Maybe that does happen. And then you got Jalen Hurts, he's put up insane numbers, but he's had some rocky patches with some turnovers the last two games. And then obviously Oklahoma has the loss. So, it's going to take a lot for Joe not to win it. It would be a real surprise. I think right now, his chances of winning it are well above 75%.
I'm with you, Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. Where are you going to be? I mean, how can you pick one game, or are you just going to sit on the couch and watch them all?
No, we've split all up. We got everybody at kind of rivalry games. I want to be at two rivalry games. I'm going to go on Friday to the Virginia Tech game that would decide the Coastal Division Championship. DC's 2-hour drive from Charlottesville. And then I'm getting on a plane Friday night and flying to Baton Rouge for LSU A&M the next day. We'll be in Baton Rouge for a few days before flying to Atlanta.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Just remember I told you what the vitriol will be when Jimbo Fisher steps off that bus and comes into Tiger Stadium. That place will be packed, and they want A&M's hide. I'm telling you, it's going to be it's a great way to end a regular season with a team that's been so good so far. It's great.
Yeah, it sure is. It should be electric environment in there, and a good tailgating scene, and from what I see, pretty good weather too. So
yeah,
should be a fun one.
Bud Foster, is that a game in Blacksburg? You said.
No, the game is in Charlottesville. Yeah, okay. Virginia Tech. Yeah, in Charlottesville, for the winner gets the wonderful prize of facing Clemson.
Oh, that's enough about that. Happy Thanksgiving to you, yours. Safe travels, and thanks so much for making our Monday special, buddy. We appreciate it.
All right, Jordy. See you.
All right, Ross Dellinger on the road heading to Charlottesville, Virginia, to do his job, then come into Baton Rouge. Back to wrap things up. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. We are Acadiana Sports Station. And, oh, by the way, I would be remiss if I did not tell you that, the holiday season's here, right? So it's time to get in the spirit. And Delta Media has you covered with Louisiana's Christmas Channel, flavored by Tabasco. You can listen at LouisianaChristmasChannel.com. Download the free mobile app on your iPhone or Android now so you can have 24/7 commercial-free Christmas music right at your fingertips. The Louisiana Christmas Channel, favored and flavored by Tabasco. Back to wrap it up next. All right, welcome back. Finishing touches to this Monday edition of the Jordy Helfrich Show. Got a little fired up there on the Raging Cajuns and their fans and all that kind of stuff. I don't know what else it's going to take, but if you don't want to go see it, you don't have to. But when the coach leaves to go to greener pastures because he doesn't get the support there from the fans, then you'll go back to winning four games a year, and shame on you. Shame on you, plain and simple. All right, let's do a little history lesson, because it was on this day, November 25th, the year was 1980. Sugar Ray Leonard regained the WBC welterweight boxing crown when Roberto Duran quit in the eighth round of the infamous No Mas fight. Guess where it was? The Superdome in New Orleans. I was there, saw it face to face, couldn't believe it. He just came out of the corner and said, no, I'm done. Sugar Ray Leonard, quickest hands I'd ever seen. Quickest hands. So good. So good. On this day, November 25th, the year 1980. If today is your birthday, November 25th, man, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. Hope you have a great day. Lots of cake, lots of ice cream. Let's see who you share the day with. Let's see. Happy birthday to Dancing with the Stars, Bruno Tonioli, who is 54 years old today. Christina Applegate is 48, married with children, amongst many other things. John F. Kennedy Jr. was born on this day in 1960. And back in 1914, Joe DiMaggio was born on this day, November the 25th. Let's see, who else? Jenna Bush Hager is 38 years old, and Amy Grant turns 59. So happy birthday to them. Happy birthday to you if it's your anniversary. Happy anniversary. I hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. Thanks to our guest today, Nick Fontenot of The Advertiser, Bob Rose of Canal Street Chronicles, talking the Saints, and Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated, talking all things college football. So Jamar Chase, named a Biletnikoff Award finalist. I think he's got a great chance of winning that thing. He has been spectacular. Yards after the catch, but getting into the end zone and getting himself open, he's something else. And the nation's best quarterback, Joe Burrow, is a finalist for the Davey O'Brien Award and the Maxwell Award. So all the best to them. What a weekend. Cajuns win 53-3. Tigers win 56-20. Saints win 34-31. Up next for LSU, Texas A&M at home, 6 o'clock kickoff. For the Raging Cajuns, ULM comes to Cajun Field, 6:30 kickoff. And the Saints on Thanksgiving night will be in Atlanta to take on the Falcons. Big week. And all the high school football games coming up on Friday. Tomorrow we'll have more on the Warhawks, more on the Aggies, more on the Falcons. And Will Wade's team came back from Jamaica, one up, one down. They lost to Utah State, bounced back, and beat Rhode Island. CD, thank you for all you do. Thanks to all of you for listening and for our partners that make it possible. Have a great Monday. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfer. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.